from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Today, we're going to explore how higher vitamin D levels are linked to longer telomeres and how that means a longer lifespan. Harvard Medical School and University of Tromsø in Norway. Then we're going to look at Brazilian pepper tree. It has a way of knocking out resistant bacteria, so it's a natural antibiotic. I'll tell you more. It's Emory University's research on that. And evidence, good evidence, in University of Rochester Medical Center shows that fish oil fights asthma. That's a big deal when you consider how many millions of kids suffer from that. And for those of you who've been using your fruits, your super fruits, fresh, or in concentrate or powder, well, good news there. The University of Coro Preto in São Paulo in Brazil found that the pulp of one of those fruits I'll mention improves the defense mechanisms, protects your arteries, is simply terrific for you. And I know a lot of you are using it on a daily basis, either drinking it or taking it in powder form. And also, if you eat whole grains, not the processed type, you're going to have more good gut microbiota and a finer immune system. Tufts University. And a lot more on health and healing. Plus, today we're going to explore some commentaries. I'm going to be sharing a commentary on the dean of the American trickle-down economic model, Professor Milton Friedman, University of Chicago. And it's his work and the people who went out from that school with their PhDs and then became advocates. I was just speaking with before the program with our executive producer, Richard Gale, who also is a graduate at the University of Chicago in theology. And he was there when Milton Friedman was there. And he said, it wasn't a normal class. It was more like a cult. That's how fervent the believers were in his principles. So I'm going to be fair for him, I'm going to let you hear in his own words his famous indoctrination talk about the pencil. And he's really good at what he does. And then I will deconstruct it to show you why it's only half-truths. Also today from Professor Henry Giroux, revisiting Orwell's 1984 and Trump's America. Also today, I will do a commentary on the refugee camps. The presidents before Trump that refused refugees banned them to show, well, if we're going to be critical of one, fine, then let's remember that other people also engaged in it. And then I'm going to do some economic conversations. Plus today, keeping with our policy to present for those women who do not have a forum, be a voice for the voiceless, especially when it comes to violence against women and everywhere, not just in America, but around the world. And I watched with a real open mind Milo to see what he was saying. He is the leading young millennial libertarian mouthpiece that's out there now. And he's gaining a lot of support on college campuses. And he does allow people to come up and challenge him. And I will provide a counterpoint to his points. And today you will hear some, I think, remarkable people. Remarkable women, and they all have something in common. They're all Muslim, and they're all educated, and they are all challenging the model that has occurred within Islam that allows those believers to use women in any way that disrespects them, including honor killings. And I think it's important we hear this. And because Milo is against Islam, period. He doesn't even say, you know, the radical terrorists who are using specific verses in the Quran to justify their killings. Of course, he is a devout Catholic, though now he recently called himself a Jew, and people can change. But in either way, I can show you writings in all these major religious books. I have over 1,100 statements out of the Bible, the New and Old Testament, that taken in the context, if you were just to read them, you would think, my goodness, what kind of deranged maniac wrote this? So he does not talk about his own religion, but he sure does go after Islam. So in defending those nonviolent, loving, peaceful Muslims around the world, and specifically the women who have lived honorable lives, are out there advocating, fighting, lobbying, and putting their lives at risk to show what should no longer be tolerated, I'm going to present the Honor Diaries and some of the top Muslim women advocates in the world will be on later today. And then we'll also, if time permits, open our lines up for talk back, because I moved a guest over to next week because we have so much to share today. So let's begin. We know that we should be getting vitamin D. And if you go outside for about 45 minutes, and if you get direct sunlight over unprotected parts of your body, not in blazing hot, but in, you know, 60, 70 degrees, you'll get your vitamin D. Upwards of 20,000 units is manufactured. But we lather so much sunscreen on because of fear of getting cancer. And in point of fact, if we got sun the proper way, we wouldn't end up with skin cancer. It's actually an immune enhancer. So we go into the sun, but we don't get the benefit of the sun. But if you got your vitamin D, either from the sun, ideally, or just taking foods rich in vitamin D, or a vitamin D supplement of 5,000 units a day, you could live a longer life. Now, this is from Harvard Medical School, as well as the University of Tromsø in Norway. Quote, increased levels of vitamin D are associated with longer telomeres, reported to be a marker of biological aging. And that is correct. This was published in the Journal of Nutrition. And I'll just explain this. First, for those who are just listening for the first time today and are not aware of my hundreds of discussions on telomeres, telo, T-E-L-O, mers, M-E-R-E-S. And the reason I spell so many words is, remember, we have people all over the world. In fact, recently, one rating showed 67,000 people tuning in from India alone. So they may not have really great English, and therefore I try to spell it so they can know what I said, and then look it up for themselves, do more research. In any case, the aging and lifespan of normal healthy cells are linked to the so-called telomerase shortening mechanism. What that means in lay language, it limits cells to a fixed number of divisions. So I'll make this even simpler. Let's just, for argument's sake, and it's a hypothesis, let's say that you have about 240 cell turnovers in your entire life of a particular group of cells. Now, there are things that will slow down that turnover and things that will speed it up. You do not want them speeded up. That is a bad thing, because the faster this turnover occurs, the quicker you die. The slower it turns over, the longer your life. Just look at it this way. What if you were sitting in a movie theater and you decided to eat while you're watching the movie? And of course, this just represents a metaphor for over a period of time, not for the actual real time in a movie. But in the one tray, you're having a glass of fresh apple juice or vegetable juice or tomato juice or grapefruit juice or orange juice or any kind of exotic juice you want, fresh, organic, natural. that actually keeps the movie running normally, even slows it down a bit. Now you start eating whole grains and nuts and seasoned legumes and berries and fruits and herbs, slows it down even more. But you decide to go to the other one. You want the hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, the colas, the sugar, the artificial drinks. Now, instead of watching the movie in real time, it speeds it up. That is literally and biologically what happens, but over a period of time, to our telomeres. We either speed them up by everything we think and do, sedentary lifestyles speeds it up. Depression, anxiety speeds it up. Insecurity, uncertainty speeds it up. Guilt and shame speeds it up. So just your emotional state can knock anywhere from a few to as many as 20 years off your lifespan because of the stressors that come with that, which are pro-inflammatory and adversely affect your hormones. But then when you exercise, you slow it down. When you take your nutrients, vitamin C and E and coenzyme Q10, you really slow it down. When you meditate, you're mindful, slow it down. When you're eating just what your body needs but not overeating and controlling your caloric intake, you really slow it down. So you could have two people born the same day go through the same educational process, but based upon the choices they make in life, one will live to be 55, die of a stroke, and the other will be at 100 and still vital and virile. So that's what it means. So when you're taking vitamin D, you're slowing down the turnover, and that is important. Now, from Emory Health University of Sciences, the red berries of the Brazilian pepper tree, it's kind of a weedy invasive species common in Florida, contain an extract with the power to disarm dangerous antibiotic-resistant staph bacteria. And the Journal of Scientific Reports is publishing the findings made in the lab, and it shows that this, quote, really heals. Quote from the article, traditional healers in the Amazon have used the Brazilian pepper tree for hundreds of years to treat infections of the skin and soft tissues. We pulled apart the chemical ingredients of the berries and systematically tested them against disease-causing bacteria to uncover the medicinal mechanisms of this plant. So the researchers showed that a refined, flavon-rich composition extracted from the berries inhibits the formation of skin lesions and also the methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which is MRSA, which kills about 25,000 Americans a year. And the compounds work not by killing the MRSA bacteria, but by repressing a gene that allows the bacteria cells to communicate with one another. And blocking that communication prevents the cells from taking collective action, a mechanism known as a quorum quenching. So that means that it's going to save your life. And that's important. And we like to share the things that save people's lives. Also, evidence points to the fish oil that's helping people with asthma. This is from the University of Rochester Medical Center, published in the Journal of Clinical Investigations. It's the omega-3 fatty acids. They can reduce the production of IgE. Those are the antibodies that cause allergic reactions and asthma symptoms in people with milder cases of asthma. So that's good. So make sure you're getting your omega-3 and ACEI. That's the red fruit, according to the Sao Paulo, Brazil University, improves your arteries, increases your antioxidant defenses. Quote, supplementing the diet of healthy women with the pulp may improve antioxidant defenses, decrease markers of oxidative stress, and help protect against the formation of plaques in the arteries. This was published in the journal Clinical Nutrition. It talks about 200 grams. Now, there's 20.35 grams to an ounce, so we're only talking about somewhere close, more or less, 6 ounces a day. Not a lot, and easy to do. That's a real superfruit, and it's pronounced ACEI, as if it were A-H S-I-G-H-E-E, but it's spelled A-C-A-I. There are a couple ways the people pronounce it. Either way, you get the point. Now, also, eating whole grains led to an improvement in your gut microbiota and your immune system, according to Tufts University Health. In a clinical trial, adults who consumed a diet rich in whole grains rather than refined grains had improvements in health in their gut and in their bacteria in their gut. And that, in turn, helps your immune system. And that was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And that's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. I've had a lot of people ask, what is the likely outcome of a Trump administration? And I'm saying, just look around you. He is unable to restrain himself. He is unable to sit quietly with people from all different types of backgrounds and let each one make a presentation and provide the evidence that their position it would be good for not just people in the United States, but for all people. If a person cannot distinguish something that is impulsive in their nature from something that is destructive in its outcome, then you're going to have destructive outcomes. I can only see destructive outcomes with this person, but we shouldn't be surprised. Why? In a strange but revealing way, popular culture and politics intersected soon after Donald Trump's presidency. Look at George Orwell's dystopian novel, 1984. I've referred to it many times in this program because I consider it a must-read, as does Henry Giroux. And in fact, right now, it's right in the top 10 bestsellers on Amazon and in the United States and Canada. Now, there are two points that we could look at just to get a glimpse forward based upon what has happened up to this point. One is from Kellyanne Conway, that's Trump's special advisor, echoing the linguistic inventions of Orwell's Ministry of Health, coined the term alternative facts to justify why Press Secretary Sean Spicer lied about advancing disproved claims about the size of Trump's inauguration crowd. And second, almost within hours of his presidency, Trump penned a series of executive orders that compelled Adam Gopnik, a writer for The New Yorker, to rethink the relevance of 1984. He had to go back to Orwell's book, he said, because the single most striking thing about Trump's matchlessly strange first week is how primitive and atavistic and uncomplicatedly brutal Trump's brand of authoritarianism is turning out to be. So I ask you, do you really believe that Trump thinks himself brutal? If this is brutal, then what would you make of his tenure as the head of the Inquisition panel known as The Apprentice? It was all about, at the end, subjugating someone to the rule of Trump's law. You're hired, you're fired. You go forward or you die in that series. How different is Trump, then, of a Nero or any of Claudius, any of the rulers in the Roman Empire? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Actually, the true history was they didn't thumb up and thumb down. That's a misinterpretation of what happened. But you could die or you could live based upon pleasing the emperor. So I don't see that Trump sees himself as imperial. I believe he just feels he's entitled, as his children have the same mindset. So in this amalgam of Trump's blatant contempt for the truth, his blend of taunts and threats, both in his inaugural address and his eagerness to enact a surge of regressive executive orders, the ghost of fascism is reasserting itself. Now, mind you, we have had hyper-fascism disguised in a velvet glove under Obama, and not disguised at all under Bush. And it's driven by a mix of fear and revenge. So unleashing promises he made to his supporters, Trump targeted a range of groups whom he believes have no place in American society. And for now, that group includes Muslims and Syrian refugees and undocumented immigrants who become the collateral damage of a number of harsh discriminatory policies. So the underlying ignorance and cruelty and punishing, if not criminogenic, intent behind such policies was amplified when Trump suggested that he intended to demolish environmental protections, resume state-sponsored torture, and deny funding to those cities willing to provide sanctuary to illegal immigrants. Now, this was just the beginning. The financial elite now find their savior in Trump. Why do you think? Now, let me put this in really basic terms. Before the election, not one major CEO in America, on Wall Street, in the larger banking community, in the industrial communities, supported Trump. Everybody was against him. The oligarchs, the complete power that they have over who they select, and they knew what they were getting with Clinton. Everything would have gone forward without any interruptions. All the international treaties would have gone through. A war against Russia would have happened, or at least posturing. The enormous buildup of more nuclear weapons, allowing Israel to attack and destroy Iran, setting off a whole new war in the Middle East. Everything you could imagine. There would have been no forgiveness for student loans. There'd still be more bubbles. The people would not have been helped on payday loans. The prisons would be doubling in the next 10 years, more poor people going to jail for minor offenses. That's exactly what happened under the Clinton regime. They didn't know what would happen under Trump, because Clinton's used to getting a fee and doing the bidding of others. Trump has always been this person who likes people to believe that he's his own person. Well, in some respects, I guess he is. But the moment he's around people, since he is functionally an illiterate, he has to surround himself with people who are successful, but he didn't have the common sense or reason. He is absolutely tone deaf to say, I'm surrounding myself with whom? Who are these people? How did they get their success? How did they get their money? Oh, well, this man over here got his success by becoming America and possibly the world's number one vulture capitalist. He goes in to failing companies. Instead of helping them, he destroys them and he profits off of them. Oh, and this person over here wants to destroy the school system and privatize it. And this person over here wants no limitation on major polluting industries, coal, oil, gas. They want to continue polluting. They don't want anything to stop that. So which the people that he surrounded himself in his immediate cabinet or the circles beyond that actually support the common good, the health and welfare of all people, not just in America, but elsewhere? Because you don't just have a domestic policy, you also have foreign policy. And of course, every one of these are failed people when it comes to anything representing humanistic values. So the current onslaught of revenge and destruction produced by this updated version of authoritarianism is glaringly visible and deeply brutal, and points to a dark future in the most immediate sense. But the arrogant and unchecked presence of this neo-fascist regime has also ignited a great collective power of resistance. Hope and sanity are in the air, and the relevance of mass action has a renewed urgency, and some mayors are refusing to allow their cities to be Nazified, and demonstrations are taking place every day, and women are marching to protect their rights. This resistance will continue to grow, but I believe in the near future, what you will see is you will see a pushback by this dystopian, Orwellian, nightmarish vision of what will happen once Trump feels threatened and he has to show that he's capable of inflicting great pain upon people. Then it all starts. How did we get here? Well, first, when it comes to one issue, let's just take the issue of immigration. Ask yourself this. Have you ever been to South America? The Caribbean, Mexico? I have. Venezuela, Brazil, every single place you could imagine, I've been. And not as a tourist. I'm always interested in studying people, the body politic, social issues, their health, the environmental issues. As much as I can possibly absorb, I want to, because I don't trust the books. I don't trust the articles. I don't trust the traditional means of telling me what the truth is in a country, because I've seen time and again with my own eyes they lie. So what if you're living in a community where the demand for drugs from America is so great and it's so profitable to produce them that the gangs come in and they bribe the police, the federal police, and the governors in Mexico? The entire system is corrupt. And so you end up with turf wars. You have seven major drug cartels. America supports one, gives it arms, doesn't arrest any of its leaders, knows everything it's doing, but it's supposed to tell us about the other gangs. And you end up with, between missing and dead, over 130,000 people in less than 10 years. Well, by any measure, that is a failure of our policy. Then you go down to South America. You go to El Salvador or Colombia. Or more recently, you go into Argentina. No matter where you go, you're going to find drugs, you're going to find corruption, you're going to find people brutalized. And the people who are always brutalized the most are the poorest people, the people who do not have advocates on their behalf. So a lot of parents do not want their children raised in such an environment. There's a high murder rate. Kids can't even not go to school because they're stopped and parents have to pay a fee to protect them, meaning if you don't give us some money, might be a dollar. But a dollar in some communities is a lot of money that day. And they even go on buses. They stop city buses from traveling from one side of town to the other, and they go, the bus driver, not the people on the bus, but the bus driver and the person that owns the bus must pay. If not, then they've shot the bus driver, they've shot people on buses, they've burned up buses. So everybody pays because we have a war on drugs. So you send a kid here. And what if you once had a job and you worked at a place and now that has been purchased and it's been taken to another country where they can get still cheaper labor? So you're left unemployed. And someone sitting in New York City, an acquisitions merger company, an equity partnership company, a hedge fund company, decided we don't care about your product, we don't care about your labor, we don't care about your environment, we care about making profits. And so they caused this. So we have to first understand, why are people coming here? Because if we supported honest governments in their countries and we completely did away with the war on terror and the war on drugs, then we would be able to have people wanting to stay in their own communities because they would have been rebuilt and the local citizens would have a democracies that protect their interest. But anytime there's been a true democracy, like in Honduras, where people voted for a person because he was for the people and he believed in land distribution, well, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and the CIA created a coup that ousted him. Because we don't want unions, we don't want living wages, we don't want environmental protections, and so now people can be exploited, especially women. So we are substantially responsible for the reasons why many people want to come to America. But why do they want to get out of Africa, North Africa in particular? Why do they want to get out of Libya? Hillary Clinton, we destroyed the entire country. There was a time when people wanted to go to Libya because it was the Paris of Africa. That's what it was called, the Paris of Africa. The highest standard of living of the 54 countries in Africa. The longest lifespans, the highest education literacy rate, free education, free medicine. You got $50,000 when you were pregnant, and you got they paid for a car, the 17 cents to 27 cents for a gallon of gasoline, and money from oil sales went into general accounts and were equally distributed among the citizens. It was affluent. They were extremely well off. Plus, they had the highest standard of equality for any Muslim women of any Muslim country in the world. More points of democracy than Israel or the United States. No crime. And the largest free water project in the world. It would have been the eighth wonder of the world. And that wasn't good for Hillary Clinton. Now, it doesn't take a lot to find out the truth about a country. So when you destroy it and you kill over 50,000 citizens, and now those citizens who are left, they're educated, they have some money and resources, and they flee to Italy, Germany, wherever. But we never say, why are they coming? We only focus upon how they got there, how they drowned or made it ashore, where they're going. And when small groups of them from different countries abuse the citizens of a country, everyone is equally condemned. You don't condemn an entire group of refugees because of the terrible acts of a small percentage. So it's reactive. It's not using reason. Let me give you some actual statistics that I believe are important. The countries that supported the war on terror and regime change are Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, Oman, Israel, and then in Europe, it would be Poland, United Kingdom. They're always behind everything bad. Did you ever notice this? Did they ever do anything good administratively there? Things people are nice, but not the people who've headed their different governments. And Germany, of course, and Turkey, and France, and Italy. So which countries, since they're responsible for the destruction of other people's homelands and the exploitation of their land and resources and administration changes, which of these countries then said, my fault, we'll take in the people who we created the mess for? Here's who hasn't taken in any people whatsoever. Not a person. Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Kuwait, Oman, Israel, Poland, and Russia, Japan, Singapore, and South Korea. Zero. Now, there are some that originally took in people. Lebanon took in 1 million. Jordan took in 1 million, then closed its doors. And Turkey took in 2 to 3 million, and it was a major cause of all this. It closed its doors. Hungary took in 200,000, closed its doors. Egypt took in 130,000, closed its doors. And Sweden and Norway are now stopping because of their problems. So shouldn't these countries all be taking in the people, stopping the hostilities, stopping funding the terrorists, stop regime change, stop exploiting resources in other countries? They should, but they're not. Now, there are countries still taking in refugees, and that would include Germany, about 300,000 last September, Denmark, 12,000, but it's a tiny country. Austria, Greece, Canada, France, Netherlands, Bulgaria, Venezuela, and Iraq, but mostly Iraqi Kurdistan, and Armenia, they're accepting Syrian Christians. And the countries that accepted the smallest number, meaning under 10,000, United States under Obama, Ireland, United Kingdom, Australia, Switzerland, Spain. Now, which of those countries are really, really troublemakers who were responsible for these refugees? Let's try United States, Australia, those two. Now, we would like to think that the only person who is bad when it comes to stopping people coming in the United States is Trump. Well, how about Obama? He was called the deporter-in-chief. He deported more than 2.5 million up until the last 2 years, but then there would have been another million after that. So you got 3.5 million. That's more than the previous 19 presidents combined. And George Bush, 2 million. Clinton, 200,000, 1997. But the United States, before it wags its finger too strongly at any one person, should remember our history. In time of war, the U.S. had strict immigration quotas. In the entire Second World War, we only allowed 25,000 Jews from Germany into the country. Do you remember the USS St. Louis? 930 refugees got to America from Germany and were turned away. But they were not the only ones. There were 300,000 applicants just in the 1930s alone, seeing what was happening in Germany. And out of 300,000 applicants, almost all Jews, we only took 27,000. And in 1939, Congress rejected a bipartisan bill to take in Jewish families and children. Now, at the time, public opinion was 61% against immigration. 1,400 American families applied to adopt a Jewish child, including the actress Helen Hayes. And when mass extermination of Jews was made public in 1942, President Roosevelt and his cabinet did nothing about it. Christian churches, with very few exceptions, the Archbishop of Canterbury and Francis Spellman in New York were the only ones I remember historically, but everyone else did nothing. We had anti-Semitic churches in the United States. In fact, in 1944, when there was irrefutable proof of Auschwitz as a death camp, the U.S. was asked, blow up the lines. We refused to do so. And it was not until the end of 1944 that FDR approved the War Refugee Board. That was near the end of the war. And only after the war did the United States agree to help refugees as a moral imperative. So after the war, we found our moral imperative, but from the 1930s, knowing all that was going on and the war itself, we did nothing. We had no moral imperative. And by the way, if you think we were bad, and we were, and anti-Semitic, and we were, the British were worse. The British Foreign Office had no intention to rescue any large number of European Jews at all. In fact, from 1919 to 1942, England restricted and created obstacles for immigration to Palestine. So understand that there is a background there. And unless we understand the full context of something, we're going to be vulnerable and susceptible to manipulation. I'm Gary Knoll. Now I want to take you over and play you, in his own words, the man who is the leader of the free market trickle-down concept of capitalism, Milton Friedman, in a famous speech that inspired an essay called Pencil by Leonard Reed.
Look at this lead pencil. There's not a single person in the world who could make this pencil. Remarkable statement? Not at all. The wood from which it's made, for all I know, comes from a tree that was cut down in the state of Washington. To cut down that tree, it took a saw. To make the saw, it took steel. To make the steel, it took iron ore. This black center, we call it lead, but it's really graphite, compressed graphite. I'm not sure where it comes from, but I think it comes from some mines in South America. This red top up here, the eraser, bit of rubber, probably comes from Malaya, where the rubber tree isn't even native. It was imported from South America by some businessmen with the help of the British government. This brass ferrule, I haven't the slightest idea where it came from, or the yellow paint, or the paint that made the black lines, or the glue that holds it together. Literally thousands of people cooperated to make this pencil. People who don't speak the same language, who practice different religions, who might hate one another if they ever met. When you go down to the store and buy this pencil, you are in effect trading a few minutes of your time for a few seconds of the time of all those thousands of people. What brought them together and induced them to cooperate to make this pencil? There was no commissar sending out orders from some central office. It was a magic of the price system, the impersonal operation of prices that brought them together and got them to cooperate to make this pencil so that you could have it for a trifling sum. That is why the operation of the free market is so essential, not only to promote productive efficiency, but even more, to foster harmony and peace among the peoples of the world.
All right. Sounds reasonable, right? Here's the other side of the equation. Let's look at the wood. Right now, we do not have a sustainable wood production anywhere in the United States. So for everything that's made from wood, we cannot guarantee that in a reasonable period of time, there will be trees growing of the same type to replace that which is there. Also, at the time that he was talking, they did not have a full comprehension of carbon sequestering, meaning that the trees you're using, that you're cutting down for making paper for newspaper and pencils, you are removing that as a source of capturing carbon and holding it into the ground and giving oxygen from the trees and its leaves in replace. Also, trees act as watersheds. A large tree can hold thousands of gallons of water in its entire body, its trunk, and its root system. And you take that away, now you're creating desertification. We see this in parts of the United States where overlogging has created massive areas of soil erosion where there's nothing holding the soil in place. The microorganisms have died. The root system's no longer there. The worms are no longer there, aerating the soil and creating phosphorus trails. As a result, everything gets washed away. So that is important. Even right now, countries like Japan that have very few natural resources have to import everything. And so they go to a country, let's say they go to South America, and they take a look at all that they have there in the way of forest, and they buy those forests. They buy all the trees you can cut. Well, think of what that means for the people of the country or the people who own the land, more often the people who own the land, and then they cut down those hardwood trees, and especially in real poor countries in South America. Peru's very poor, but they have one of the best hardwood forests in the world. So you cut that down and you ship it out, but you do not replace it with new trees. It's just a scarred earth, much like in West Virginia where they mountaintop removal. And now you are left with these bleak landscapes that have completely altered the natural aesthetics. So now all that log goes back to Japan, its process, and taken into stores as original hardwood furniture. By destroying the hardwoods, which are the longest of the lived of these trees, we are destroying the trees' futures, all because people want some hardwood furniture, and they want it now. And the market's willing to pay enough that you're going to pay far more, 2 to 3 times more for hardwood than non-hardwood. And then let's look at the rubber that's made. That is using petroleum. Now, there was a time when petroleum made America capable of not just enjoying the Industrial Revolution, but everything we're using today, almost everything from your basketball and your sneakers and your computers, your cars, the tires, the windows, all that required the base of petroleum products. The trouble was, in the process of doing this, we did not do it reasonably. We did not consider what do we do with the byproduct of it. As a result, we have a plastic debris in the Pacific Ocean 3 times the size of Texas, and it kills billions of fish, turtles, porpoises, whales that get caught up in it, eat it, thinking it's food. We have no responsibility. We use it and we throw it away. We had no plan of what to do with it. to find a non-toxic and natural biodegradable substitute. We could have, but we didn't, and we still don't. So now you have a rubber that, sure, it can erase things, but at what cost? There's just right now an effort to take away the laws prohibiting blood diamonds and any kind of mineral or metal to be mined in Africa that would have harmed people in the process. And so we're right back to where we were in the 1970s and 80s and up through the mid-90s, where people would be worked to death, would be used, brutalized to get a product like a diamond. There's a consequence to where things come from. Milton Friedman never thought about the consequence. He only thought about how important it was for us to continue to consume as if we had three planets from which we could exploit its natural resources. But we only have one. And a lot of stuff is finite. Every single 24 hours, 200 species are dying. The newest ones to start to die off are orangutans because of the palm trees that are being, and it's a toxic oil, palm oil, and in Indonesia. And the Indonesian government is brutal, it's dictatorial, and it's corrupt, and it's genocidal. And they don't care what they do to the environment. They don't care about chimpanzees. They don't care about humans. And so we buy their products. And when you buy a product from a country that doesn't care about where it came from, what it costs, or how it imbalances nature, then you're part of the problem, not them. If you are buying something that cannot be degraded, then understand you're part of the pollution problem. So we buy things we don't need, and we exploit people to get what we need. We create debt we cannot pay. We then allow those banks that have enormous amounts of money to exploit us. And that's Milton Friedman's ideal. It's his utopian vision because he controls what is produced, what is exploited from that production. He doesn't care about anyone at the trickle-down level. And that's why the trickle-down theory of Milton Friedman's economic model and the capitalism behind it is a failure. Now, let me go a little further. So what should we do about it? First and foremost, let's get off their grid. How can we do that? Credit unions. Why should we go to a credit union? Because they're essentially nonprofits. Most are. They have lower loan rates. They pay much higher savings yields. They're lighter on fees. 72% of the largest credit unions offer free non-string checking. Many don't even have monthly fees. And they have lower fees for overdrawing. And many require only $5 to open a savings account. And if you're a veteran, there are quite a few available. But you must be a veteran. Not to BM them, but they give you special advantages. Also, what are the best ones that I have found? Alliant Credit Union, Alliant. Free if living in Chicago area. Otherwise, it's just a $10 fee to join. And that's contributed to Foster Care to Success, helps teens who are too old to be in foster care system. There's Conexus Credit Union, free to Wisconsin counties. Otherwise, just a $5 donation to join, which is donated to Red Cross and American Cancer Society. Both I would never give a nickel to, but they do. I understand they're doing it with good intentions, so I'm not critical of them doing it. I just don't believe anyone should ever give a nickel to the Red Cross or American Cancer Society. GTE, Financial Credit Union. It was started in 1935, and like Alliant, it's often on top of lists because of the wide variety of financial service it offers. And then Infinity Plus Credit Union, in Minnesota-based, and they must make one-time $25 donation to support their nonprofits, and they help support small business education. And NASA, NASA, Federal Credit Union, you just deposit $5 in a savings account. And the American Heritage Federal Credit Union in Philadelphia requires a one-time $15 donation for children requiring special care, and such as music therapy. And then Suncoast Credit Union, although in the Gulf Coast of Florida, also partners with other financial services throughout the country. And then Melrose Credit Union creates some of the lowest fees. These are reputable. And also those are credit unions. Then there's some reputable banks like Ally Bank, consistently ranked in the top of best online banking and best checking, and Bank of Internet USA, and the first internet bank, and the State Farm Bank, one of the best banks for online services, 2016. And the best state banks are the Oregon State Bank, the Bank of North Dakota, and the Maine Partnership Bank. Now, which are the worst companies, in my opinion, for their horrible employment record and ripping off consumers? Well, here's the ones we should not do business with. AT&T, DirecTV, Cox Communications, Time Warner, Con Ed, Comcast, Citibank, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, McDonald's, Walmart, WellPoint, Health, Facebook, which, by the way, is listed as one of the 10 worst companies, a Business Insider, American Airlines, Delta, U.S. Airlines, United Airlines. And which are the biggest polluters? This is from the University of Massachusetts. American Electric Power, Duke Energy, Southern Company, U.S. Government, which is ranked fourth, by the way, Berkshire Hathaway, Marin Corp, Luminant Generation, First Energy Generation, AES Corp, Xcel Energy, Edison International, ExxonMobil, Energy, they own the nuclear power plants, British Petroleum, U.S. Steel, Koch Brothers, and ArcelorMittal, which makes steel, and ConocoPhillips. And which are the worst military contractors, ranked as largest would be Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, United Technologies, L3 Corporation, BAE Systems, Halliburton, Humana. The worst companies for the level of corruption, again, these are my research and personal opinion, Monsanto, Facebook, Google, Merck, Pfizer, DuPont, Microsoft, British Petroleum, Chevron, Stratfor, and every Fortune 500 investment bank, like Goldman Sachs, Murdoch Media firms, Philip Morris, Anheuser-Busch for union busting, Federal Express, they're in the same bed with Alec, and Wall Street Journal, another Alec corporation, and of course Congress. So those are some of the best and worst. And that way, by understanding where you are, you can go to your pension fund. And if you're a state worker, municipal worker of some type, a federal worker, police, fireman, school teacher, you may be very ethical. You may wanting to invest in green. But what if your corporation or your investment is investing in these companies? You could empower them not to. You could empower them to get out of all fossil fuels and only invest in solar, wind, wave, geothermal in the future. Invest in organic gardening, not GMOs. And that's important we become involved. So now at least you have some tools to work with. Now, we're going to take a break for a moment. Let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann. Is Luann there? No? We're coming up to, I want people in this audience to have enough time to make plans to be at the only retreat I'm going to do for the rest of the year. It's going to be the first week of April, first and second week of April, because our first week's almost full. And it's going to be in a beautiful environment near the Louisiana and Arkansas border up in the mountains. There's going to be so much in the way of understanding your health, longevity, anti-aging, de-stressing, overcoming depression, anxiety, dealing with life issues. There's lectures every day. There's counseling, gourmet vegan meals, juicing all day, yoga, meditation, sitting with nature. We're also adding something new, pottery, and so you actually make stuff. And with great artists who are going to be there, two different artists in two different areas sharing how to do different artwork. So it's going to be wonderful. Also, for the first time, I'm doing a real long workshop on what to do with the upcoming, what I consider absolutely essential, the climate meltdowns that are going to be causing major disasters around the United States. So where to live, how to get there, how to prepare yourself. So what to do when any kind of disaster strikes. I'm going to be doing workshops on that as well. So here are some of the people that were at the last one. Just want you to hear some of their experiences. These are unrehearsed, unedited, just as they're saying. Real people, listen to them.
I'm Ted Mancuso. I have chronic Lyme disease. And I had a horrible 2016 coupled with so many other diseases that it brought my immune system down as low as it possibly could be. In fact, when we were coming here at the airport, I needed a wheelchair to get me to the starting gate, or I wouldn't be here. The experience here after a few days, after a few treatments in this tranquil environment where there is no negativity, where the people are just giving, and the staff and Gary give so much love that it's not like riding the 6 train in New York City. After one of the treatments that Gary did with the hands-on, I was lifted so much, I was walking around the wonderful grounds and just saying, I feel great, I feel great, I feel great. I was all alone. I used to be a tennis player. I walked over to the tennis court and I was making believe I was playing a match, and it was truly magical. The fact that I could just swing my arms and get to the tennis court was heavenly. I just want to thank Gary for this week in Paradise Island, also known as Magical Island to me now, because I really wasn't looking for a magic bullet, but I've been rebooted to a point that I'm able to function again. So I thank Gary, the staff, and the wonderful people that were here, the good friends that we met, and it was an experience I'll never forget. The energy work on one day was so uplifting that I went walking around the grounds just saying how great I feel out loud. I walked to the tennis court and I was swinging the racket as though I was playing a game, and I haven't felt that way in over a year. It was truly a blessing and a magical experience.
I'm Thomasina. I've spent a week here at Gary's retreat. I just want to say that my husband, who has been very ill, before we came here, has long been talking about finding a way to end his life. He was so desperate because of his illness, Lyme disease, he calls it, but it's a constellation of illnesses probably, that he wanted to end his life. He talked to me all the time about helping him, help me find a way. Where do we have to go? Where do I have to go to do this? And he said, if I had the courage, I would do it. I just don't have the courage to do it, but I want to do it. I don't want to struggle with this any longer. And this is the man who, after a few days here, has been running the track, and this morning ran probably 10 laps, and who feels very, 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 very much improved and happy. And so am I. Very, very happy. Thank you, Gary.
Hi, my name is Raj. I've been diagnosed with stage 4 prostatic metastatic cancer. Doctors say they don't have many options remaining, But I always knew that, I always felt there's something that would heal me. There has to be something. So I came with hope to Gary Knowles Paradise. What I learned was a new way of living. I'm a meat and potatoes eater. I've tried to go to vegetables and organic, but here I have no, I've had no stomach issues. I've had no health issues since I've been here. My body feels strong, invigorated, refreshed. Amazingly, before I came here, I was about to get a shot in my ankle because I tore my Achilles and I have an avulsum fracture in the same ankle. None of it was necessary. I don't know if it was the juice, but the peace of mind. Here I found serenity. I have serenity now. I have absolutely no fear, something that troubled me. I haven't had a pity party since I've been here. And it's not a feeling. I know I'll be okay. And I know this is the right way. The nutritional aspect is amazing. The peace of mind, I'm planning to get a house and I want to mimic these surroundings in my home upstate because there's nothing like it. It's like a new lease. It's a no quit, no surrender, and there's no possibility of defeat. I really feel that way, and that's from the inside out. And I'm not a groupie, Andy, and I'm a very spiritual person. In fact, I'm a priest of the Yoruba religion for many years, and I have to say this is really a life-changing experience. The energy work. I've had energy work before. I study Qigong myself and Tai Chi I practice. The energy work, amazing. I've had it before, visualizing through the center of my head, and I was touching my Qi point, which I'm familiar with. The most amazing thing that made it different, that I felt was different than others, I didn't feel a shocking experience, but what I did feel was it felt like a wave of calm and serenity go from my body, from my head to my toes, just like a wash of beautiful white water, gentle tides that just cleansed me and invigorated me as I surrendered to it.
So those are just a few of the voices. As you see, what happens at a retreat doesn't happen anywhere else. It's a unique experience. Luann Panessi's on the line. Luann, give people your number because you got to get through Luann to get to the retreat. Luann?
Yes. Call me at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. We have 2 weeks that are available. The first week is just about filled, and the second week, April 9th to the 15th, I'm still signing people up.
Give that number again.
Surely, 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008.
Thank you, Luann. Okay. Nice to speak with you all. Stay tuned now for Utrice Lead on the Progressive Radio Network.